Good morning, everyone. So if, like me, you know, at this hour, we're starting to get a little bit hungry, you know, I think it may be worthwhile to remind ourselves of why we are fasting. So the Mishnah actually tells us there were five things that happened in our history on the 17th of Tammuz. First was the smashing of the tablets in response to the golden calf. In the times of the temple, the daily Tumid sacrifice was discontinued. There's a king, Apostamus, who came and burnt the Sefer Torah, and an idol was brought into the sanctuary. Of course, since then, the time of the 3 weeks, the Beina Mitzarim, unfortunately, has been a time of tragedy, culminating with Tisha B'Av. Oh, sorry, I didn't mention that the walls of Jerusalem were breached. Hopefully this will be a time in the future of more happy occasions, but these are among the reasons why we're fasting today. So has anybody ever seen the show What Would You Do? That's not on here. Okay, so you have seen it. So there's a show that basically they take a hidden camera and they have actors playing out different scenarios, and they want to see how people will react. So sometimes they'll have, remember there's an episode of a mother yelling at her daughter for, you know, getting a 99 on her test instead of 100, or, you know, the mother's on the phone and they're in a department store, they're not really paying attention to the kids. And then there are more in extreme examples. There are one where a girl was being very rude to a nanny, or people are making fun of the waitstaff at the restaurant, and you want to see how people will react. And in many ways, it kind of gives you faith in humanity, because you see a lot of people really step up. It's really amazing. People will see these situations, and they'll step up, and they'll get involved. Then they'll see this actor or this host, John Quinones, that comes in, and they realize they're on TV. I've always thought, you have to be careful wherever you are, because who knows? And there are invariably also other people who don't respond. And some of them, I guess, agree to be on camera afterwards. And they ask, why didn't you respond? And they'll say that I was troubled by seeing it. But I don't know, they looked intimidating, or, it's sort of a family drama, I was concerned, it's really none of my business. And, that approach, there's understanding. How do we know how we would react? Maybe, you see between a family, you don't really want to get involved. So oftentimes it can be tricky. When do we get involved, and when do we, mind our own business? And this really touches on the trait of humility. You see, in Source 1, the dictionary defines humility. I saw a couple different explanations between the Oxford and Webster's, but the Oxford dictionary says humility, it says in the quality of having a modest or low view of one's importance. So if you have a modest or low view of one's importance, so maybe you don't get involved in everything. Maybe you're not jumping in to save the day. And the question is this a good quality? What do you think? Depends. It depends. So that's of course true. If you look at the Rambam in Source 2, he seems to say that it's a really good quality. Generally, he has the approach of having the golden mean, not necessarily having being too extreme in any of our traits or practices, but he notes a couple of exceptions. He says, Source 2, Yesh deyo she'asur lo la'adam linhog bahen bevenonis. There are some temperaments that a person shouldn't conduct himself in the middle path. Ela yisrachek min ha'katze echad ala katze ha'acher. That he should stay very, very far from these types of traits. And, for example, she'ein derech hatova, it's not the proper way, she'a adam anav bilvad, he shouldn't just be modest, ela she'yesh shval ruach, he should be very lowly. He should be lowly and his spirit unassuming. And it says, Lefichach, we have a proof for this. Nemar, the Moshe Rabbeinu, Anav Me'od. He said that the man Moshe was very humble. V'lo Nemar, Anav Bilvad. It doesn't just say that he was humble. Lefichach, Tzivu Chachamim, Me'od Me'od, Evei Shvel Ruach. That a person should be very, very lowly, very, very modest. And this is something that, you know, we say it depends, and I think that's very true, but we could interpret from here that maybe it doesn't depend. Maybe you really have to be extreme, and this is something that, you know, don't think you take the middle path. Maybe this is something that, you really have to take to the nth degree. At the same time, the Talmud tells us in Source 3, the temple was actually destroyed because of humility. It says, Amar of Yochanan, Mesanuso shel Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkolos, Hakriva es Beisenu. That the humility of Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkolos burned our temple. The Sarfa es Hecholenu, and burned the sanctuary, destroyed the temple, burned the sanctuary, and Iglisanu Meretzenu. And Exa caused us to be exiled from our land. So what happened? What's the story of Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkolos? So, I gave you part of the Gemara here, but there's a background. There's an important man who's hosting a party, and he has a friend named Kamsa and an enemy named Bar Kamsa. Now, if you think that those are similar names, so the Marsha does point out that it very, very well have been a father and a son, and the son thought that maybe the father had interceded, because what happens? He sends out invitations to the party, and instead of going to Kamsa, the mailman makes a mistake, and he brings it to Bar Kamsa. So Bar Kamsa thinks, you know, maybe the relationship is getting better, maybe my father interceded. So Bar Kamsa comes to the party. And you see that Bar Kamsa's assumptions or optimism didn't end up being true, because he comes in and the host says, "What are you doing here, Bar Kamsa? You're my enemy. How could you have the chutzpah to come to my party?" So Bar Kamsa is very embarrassed, as I think we would be, and he says, "You know what? I don't want to make trouble. I'll pay for my meal." No way. You have to go. He says, "Don't embarrass me. I'll pay for half of the party." No, not good enough. I'll pay for the whole thing. Not good enough. So Nakde Biyade, he takes in his hand, he throws Bar Kamsa out. And Bar Kamsa is naturally very, very hurt by this. It says, Amar, Hoyil Behevi Yosvi Rabbanim Velo Michube. Because who was at this party? At the party, all of the distinguished rabbis were there. And they were seated, and they didn't say anything. So he says, because the rabbis were sitting there, and they didn't protest, Shmamina Kon Nichaluhu. So then I see that, you know, that the rabbis are supposed to be pious people, but they're obviously okay with this type of behavior. So Ezel Echol Kortza Bey Malka, he goes and wants to enforce. He's like, "I'm going to go and I'm going to get these Jews in trouble," to the Romans. Amarle the Caesar, he says to the Caesar. I'm not actually sure how he gets, you know, the entry if he was well connected, but he goes and he says to the Caesar, "Mardu v'cha you die," that the Jews are rebelling, they're not so loyal. What did he say? Amarle Shtarluhu Karbanas. You know what, you want to see how loyal they are? Send them a sacrifice, Kazi Mekarvins. See if they'll actually sacrifice it to you, and sacrifice it on their altar. And so what does Bar Kamsa do? He wants to set them up. So he makes a little nick in the upper lip of the animal, which would make it, at least for the Jewish people, a disqualification. So he sends that, and the Caesar wants to offer it, and the question then arises among the sages, should we do this? So sounds like many of the sages says, you know, this is going to pose a danger. We should sacrifice it nevertheless. There would be legal grounds to do so. Kesavar Abanan, the Kruve, the rabbi says to do it, Bishom Shalom Malchus, because you want to keep peaceful relationships with the government. But we have this Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas. Amar Lehu Rabbi Zachariah ben Afkulas, Zachari ben Avkula said to them, Yomur Bali Mumin, Kraven Lagabim Mizbeach. If we do this, then people are going to get the impression that animals with disqualifications can be sacrificed on the altar and violate a Torah prohibition. So, okay, they weren't going to do that. So then the rabbis thought, Savar Mikdale, maybe we should kill him. Not kill the Moser or Rodev. He's an informer, so maybe we should kill him. The Lazel Velema, so he won't go and inform on us. Amar Lehu Rabbi Zachariah, but Rabbi Zachariah said, if we kill him, then people will think that the penalty of bringing disqualified offerings on the altar is death. So they didn't end up killing him. And then what we saw in source 3 was actually the continuation of the Gemara that said, because of his modesty, because of his humility, the temple was destroyed and we were exiled. So what was, and then the Gemara after that just makes a note that the embarrassing someone we see the terrible effects of that. So what was Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos's humility? What does it sound like? He said, we shouldn't offer it because people will, you know, we don't know what people think. He's being timid, right? He doesn't really want to take a chance. It's like, if we do this, I don't know. And he's evidently a leader. You know, they're coming to him, he's being consulted, and he doesn't want to take a stand. He wants to play it safe. So right, so not necessarily humility or not necessarily in the whole aspect of humility, but there's a certain aspect of timidness. So Rashi on this Gemara comments in source 5, what was his humility? So he's as Salvanus Shasal as Zevilo Hardu, that he took all of this, had excessive tolerance. Bar Kamsa was going and was going to reform on them, and you know, he was again playing it safe. Is he really liable for the death penalty? You know, how can we do this? And he didn't have Bar Kamsa killed, which evidently, according to Rashi's understanding, may have been the proper thing to do in that situation. So this Gemara is probably more well known. One reason why it could be more well-known is one of the aspects of Torah that you're allowed to learn at Tisha B'Av. Generally, we say that Torah makes you glad, so you're not supposed to learn Torah. There's a couple exceptions of those parts of Torah which really do the opposite and remind us of the destruction. So this is basically what the Gemara says. However, there's a Medrash in Eicha Rabbah that fills in another bit of information. What was his... what it says, that humility that destroyed the temple. In source 6, it says, Vayasham Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos, Sivagbi Yodro Limchos Velo Micha. That he was there, he was at the party, and he didn't protest. So he wasn't someone who came on the scene afterwards and was trying to play it safe with this legal decision. He was actually at the party. And what was his humility? Like, what would you do? He didn't want to get involved. He was afraid to get involved, and you know, later on we'll see what exactly his calculation may have been. So we look at both approaches. One, that of the Gemara, that really the humility was that he didn't want to kill Bar Kamsa, didn't want to make a decision with the sacrifice. So I look at Surah 7. So the Maritzkayos, one of the commentaries on the Talmud, says that sometimes you need to lead. And that's really the problem, is that it says, look, because of the great humility of Zachariah ben Avkulos, lo hir v'nafsho, oz lasos bazeh, halacha l'maisa, he didn't consider himself powerful or distinguished enough to rule in matters of practical law. He was worried. People would say, maybe people might say that he ruled not in accordance with the Jewish law. he thought that he was, one, not great enough, and if he, you know, if others disputed, it may have been a damage to his reputation. He didn't think that he was distinguished enough to do this. He says that he didn't consider his opinion to be valid, and it should be. And really, this type of decision, even though he was one of the early sages of the Mishnah, he thought he wasn't distinguished enough, and really should be something that should be consulted or referred to the even greater sages. And it says, "Uneze amru lashon." Misanuso, that it says that it refers to the language of humility. Because he didn't want to rely on his own opinion, so that led to the destruction of the temple. Because there are some times where you need to lead. And Mitzvah Hashem, will see at the end that we will see how it compares to Moshe, especially because the Rambam said that Moshe's example is being very, very humble. At the same time, Moshe was, you know, the greatest leader that we ever had. So where do we see? So the Maritz Chayes says that evidently what was going on is that Zachariah didn't step up to the plate to lead. And we see this quality elsewhere with Zechariah ben Afkulis. If you turn over the page, Tosefta in Masechet Shabbos records another incident where Zechariah ben Afkulis is involved and seemingly has the same type of approach. There is an argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about issues pertaining to muktzah, what things that you can candle on Shabbos, and how you would do it. So Beis Hillel says, lift the bones and shells from the table. Beis Shammai says, remove the entire tray and shake it off. That way you can move these items. But Rav Zechariah ben Afkulis, he didn't follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, nor Beis Shammai, nor that of Beis Hillel. Rather, he spat the bones out behind the couch. He avoided any manner of handling it at all. And he played it safe. At the same time, we have rules in Jewish law. We're not supposed to, especially on Shabbos, we're not supposed to, you know, if we sat around in our room doing nothing, so we would be bound not to violate Shabbos. At the same time, that doesn't lead to enjoyment on Shabbos, and for certain things, decisions need to be made. But apparently here, it was Zechariah ben Afkulis, seemingly according to his way of operating, he didn't get involved. And then the Tosefta actually says here, and it's totally an unrelated context, it says the humility of Zechariah ben Afkulis burned the sanctuary, seeming from the same quality of being timid, of not wanting to get involved. So there are other examples that we see, and we see when we try to define humility a little bit more clearly, and we see what kind of humility is good humility. So, continuing on this idea of leadership, the Chovos HaLevavos says that when he was contemplating writing his book, so he says all of the reasons why. Why it was important, he discovered that, you know, the duties of the heart were something that hadn't really been written about, and felt that it was important. And so he thought, really, it was on his shoulders to do so. But then, source 9, he says in the introduction to the Chovos HaLevavos, he said, when I thought of proceeding to carry out my decision to write this book, I saw that a man like myself is not fit to compose a work like this. He said, I estimated that my strength was insufficient to properly divide its parts. The writing appeared too vast for my eyes, my knowledge too inadequate, and my intellectual faculties too weak to grasp the topics. But then he thought about, so this is humility. Who am I to write this? He determined that it was an important thing, but who was he to write this? But then he, upon more reflection, he thought, was this actually humility? He said, when I then decided to relieve myself of the burden of this undertaking and give up my plan of composing this work, I again suspected my soul of having chosen tranquility to dwell in the abode of laziness and peace and quiet. So maybe it wasn't a... We have to sometimes think when we're hesitant to jump into leadership roles. Okay, we don't want to get involved in everything, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's a certain laziness. Maybe there's a higher benefit of kulas. You don't want to think about it as much. You have to weigh the different decisions. Maybe it's easier not to necessarily take that leadership role. But sometimes, as the Chovas Levavos. As the Chovas Levavos, Rinu Bach Ibn Pakuda, as he said, that sometimes when one doesn't step into a leadership role, it may not be humility driving it, rather a certain laziness, a certain hesitance to get involved. So another thing that I would like to suggest is, was it really humility? The Talmud and the Medrash refer to it as humility, but is this the humility comes in different stripes, and sometimes it's not necessarily even a good quality. So the Orchos Tzadikim in source 10 says there is a modesty which is as evil as arrogance. Okay, so not all modesty is good. Therefore, those who are modest in their dress and speak gently and conduct themselves as pious and just, in order that others should believe them and depend on their words, and here this is very important, and flatter those who should not be flattered. That's another manifestation of this terrible modesty. This modesty that's basically like haughtiness. And did Zechariah ben Avkulis, did he have that trait? So if you look at source 11, the Marsha in Maseches Gittin on this Gemara. So why didn't the sages protest? And if we understand that based on the Medrash that Rav Zachariah was also at this party, he says maybe they didn't protest because they were maybe it wasn't. They felt that it wasn't in their hands to do so, that they weren't able to. Because flattery reigned in that generation. That here you had this important person, and he was obviously making a big party. All the rabbis there; they were all seated on the dais. You know, it could be a prestigious thing. You know, he's your benefactor. It's not so simple. But we see that maybe Zechariah's humility was really the kind of humility that the Orchos Tzadikim is describing, the flattering people who shouldn't be flattered. We could also suggest that maybe it wasn't humility at all, and maybe we could explain why Zechariah was tongue-tied based on the following from the Talmud Yerushalmi in Yevamos. So I make no pretenses about being an expert or anything in the Yerushalmi and Yevamos, but it's a good thing Rav Chaim Kanievsky is, because I saw this in a book that he wrote, so the great sage in Eretz Yisrael, so he pointed me to this Yerushalmi. So what happened? Rav Zechariah ben Avkulis, as we see, especially if he was there at the party, he was totally tongue-tied. He didn't say anything. So why might that have been? So the Yerushalmi tells of an incident where Rebbe nominated Levi Bar Sisi to be the head of a town, to be the rabbi and the preacher, the school teacher, all the head of all of the different institutions in the town. And when they wanted to inaugurate him or evaluate him, so they sat him on a large beam, on a large platform, and they started asking them questions. Obviously, if Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler of the Mishnah, gave him his job reference, so he was seemingly a very qualified person. So they asked him different questions about specifics in Jewish law. So one of them was related to Yevamos. How does a woman without hands perform chalitza? Okay, so he didn't respond. I probably wouldn't respond either. And they asked him a whole other series of questions. And you know, Rebbe sees this. He just gave him his letter of recommendation, and they're starting to ask him questions, and he is not answering them. So Rebbe asked Levi, why did you not answer them? So Levi explained, they placed me on a large platform, so I became overcome with pride and could not answer. And then Rebbe then cited the verse, if you've been from Proverbs, if you've been shamed in regard to Torah, it is because you raised yourself. Because he felt that honor and prestige and maybe haughtiness by being up on the platform and getting this type of respect. So in the end, he actually got the opposite. He wasn't able to answer it, that basically he got the humiliation instead of the honor. And perhaps this is what happened with Rabbi Zachariah ben Apkulas. He was up, he was seated on the dais, and this was nice, even though, let's be real, he was a Tana. He was one of the sages of the Mishnaic period. It's a scary thing. Well, I can't say that I would have done any better, but maybe it was. The sages were given a prominent position, and maybe in other circumstances he may have responded. But the flattery caused him to really be tongue-tied, and he didn't end up getting involved, and the effects, of course, were tragic. So what type of humility is good humility? You say that the Rambam says that a person should take humility to the extreme. And the example it says is that Moshe doesn't say that he was just humble. He was very humble. He was extremely humble. In source 13, the verse says, "Reish Moshe anev ma'od mikol adam asher al pnei adamah." That Moshe was more humble than any person on the face of the earth. The context of this is that he is insulted and he doesn't respond. He intercedes for Miriam, and so she was more humble than, so why is Moshe's humility something that's the paradigm and it's something that we should even take to an extreme? So the Nitziv, Talei Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, says in source 14, the Emek Dovar, he says, what does it mean that Moshe was extremely humble? Anav Ma'o, that he was more humble than any other person. He says, Umashmos Anav hu she'enu choshesh l'chvodo v'tzaro. That it means he wasn't concerned about his honor or pain. It wasn't that he felt himself so lowly that he thought, he was a pushover, that he thought that I'm so lowly, I can't be a leader, that I deserve this type of insult. No, he knew very well that it was inappropriate. He knew very well that he was the only prophet in history that had a direct line to Hashem, other than Bilam, which we just read about. He knew that he was a leader. So it wasn't that he didn't know that, but he didn't care about it. It wasn't something that he valued. As Ella Mashmoz Anav Shehu Shumis Naig Bli Chashash Al Kvodo, that he functioned without concern for his honor. Right, so I think the humility, the nature of the humility was different, and we see. I think this could be if we go back to the Maariv Chayes in source 7 on the first page. What was it? He didn't think of himself as worthy of it. It wasn't like Moshe. Moshe knew that he was a leader. Right? Clearly, he acted like a leader, the leader in a way that nobody else did. Yizchar ben Afkulis, he was like what the Netziv is saying that Moshe wasn't. He didn't feel that he was worthy of it. Moshe, on the other hand, he knew his value, but he wasn't going to go chasing honor. I think that could be the difference, is what type of humility is and what the humility is coming from. To get, right. So I think what was going on here, it was symptomatic of a broader problem. That you have one person with a friend, one person with an enemy, people not speaking up. And even if the friend and the enemy are father and son, the types of alliances that were around, that someone wouldn't even care if his son, if you know, is someone who was giving him prestige, hated his son. You know, I think this was symptomatic of what was going on in society. And what was Bar Kamsa's claim? He said, because the rabbis were sitting there and they didn't do anything, obviously they were okay with it. So it was really, then he went and got the Jews in trouble, but really because of that. He saw that the breakdown of society, that people are in alliances, people are submit to flattery, and you know, his thing was more than this. It was really, really representative of the sinas finem, but this was the type of society that we were living in. So, I think the difference is we see that Moshe was, it's not that he viewed himself not qualified to come and step in, he just, with his humility, was, he wasn't looking for honor, and he didn't care, and was able to forgive people, maybe even who slighted him. And I noticed, I used with the translation that I used from Chabad.org, it's getting a lot of credit, they have the whole Rambam translated, it's very convenient, but I think that it says on the, if you go to source 2, on the second line, it says, Elish Yish Shvel Ruach. You should be, not you should think of yourself. The translation says a person should hold himself. So it could be that, it's really a fine line between thinking of yourself as not worthy of stepping in and being a leader, as opposed to conducting yourself in a way that you don't pursue honor when it's not necessarily and when it's not beneficial for anyone else. Yes?
So you also put a lot of motivation.
Right, right. He wants to praise Hashem, yeah. Right. Right. No, it's definitely that balance. You know, I think it's not learning, it's not looking for honor and prestige for you, for yourself. It could be, and I think in Moshe's case, it could be if you're in a position to help someone, it could be. Okay, yes. Yours, yeah.
It's not yours. It's the gift that comes from Hashem. Because you give it back, so that made him, that it gave him to be a leader, but a leader who never thinks that is any longer because he fully understood.
Knew that it was nothing from him. Right, right. So I think you could suggest that maybe even feeling so unworthy means you're making calculations about yourself. You're saying, you know, I'm worthy to some degree, but not to another. As opposed to, you're not acknowledging that everything's necessarily from Hashem. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right, right. You see that the humility that we're told that the Chow had from the beginning was something that didn't necessarily serve him so well, even later on in his career. So that's really, it's really the fine line. Yep.
There's a very famous poem in English literature called Kiss. And the thing is directly to this, it's speaking to this situation directly of the necessity of assuming leadership that nobody else does. And it was taught in grade school, reading Stanford, and written. It's called Kiss by Rudyard Kipling. And it really goes into this detail. I'm sure if you Google it online.
Right. No, it's very, it's an important thing. Yes. Right, right.
The
thing is not so great.
It down, playing it down. The man got so angry that he slapped the puppy time. They get, it's not funny. They get off the train, and there's a big crowd of people. The man says to somebody, he says, why are all these people here? So he says, because the puppy time is coming, he's right over there. And the man got so upset, he went over the puppy time, and
right, right. I think based on that, you said that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara about yourself. That, right. No, it's definitely the problem. Yes. It's really a hard thing to say when, because someone wants to, is going to get involved in every situation and try to come out a hero. That could also be lack of humility. They're looking for notoriety. But I think you would say when we see there are situations that call for it. Certainly, we say Chazal tells when there's no other man, you have to come in and help. I think that could be maybe that could be the balance. That we're not looking for situations to get on TV or to be a hero. But if the situation calls for it and we see that that we're in a position to help, I think it's not a compromise of pursuing humility to step in a situation like that. So, yep.
And yet, much of Daniel, with his humility and his leadership, didn't quite step up like coming up on Parsha, the way Kipris did. Right? He was the leader, much of Daniel was the leader, he should have taken action, and it took his nephew, I guess, to step up to the plate. And aside from that, there were other episodes in Moshe's life, as we know, right, with the water and all this, that he's a leader and humility, and apparently things didn't work.
Right. I mean, in general, Moshe, as great as he was, and he is the greatest, really greatest person to ever live, he was a human being, so we see maybe there are cases where, on his own level, he didn't necessarily do what his potential could have been. Maybe he's nevertheless, he was still the most humble person who ever lived, but maybe that could be a lack of humility or leadership in those cases where Moshe didn't step up as much as maybe he could have. So it could have been. It could have been that Moshe wasn't necessarily perfect. Yeah. No, you try. And that's he's the most humble who ever lived, but even then. So just to conclude, there's a medrash that says that why was the Torah given on Har Sinai? Because Har Sinai was the smallest of all mountains. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe asks, if the idea is to receive the Torah on a place that's low in a non composing way. So why could have given it in the valley, in the desert? Why was the Torah given on a mountain? So the Babi Chirabi answer is that no, you need to be humble, but you still need to know that you're a mountain. You still need to be able to jump in when necessary. And it's really that balance of being humble, of not considering yourself certainly worthy of praise or honor because of anything that you think that you develop yourself, but really recognizing that everything's from Hashem. So it means Hashem, when the situation calls for it, we should all have the strength and fortitude to jump in situations that were needed, and hopefully through repairing some of the things that Rav Zachariah ben Apulis was not able to repair, we should be able to not be fasting next year.